Okay, here we are. Off the Hook Overtime is on the air until somebody decides that we're too objectionable and reports us. it's good to be back. I've got some interesting headlines. We're talking about sensationalism. Here's one. Hackers threaten poisonings, blackouts of utilities. Are we prepared? Hackers are threatening poisonings now. It's really getting serious. This is from some TV station someplace. This is how they get viewers, by scaring the crap out of them. Or how about this? Hackers expose 8.4 billion passwords online. Your security is at risk. Alex, your security is at risk. I'm talking to you.
Well, it always is. You know, that's the issue, right? Even though we are security professionals, even our security is at risk. We have to, constantly stay vigilant, stay alert, and keep learning. That's part of the hacker spirit. That's, I think, why many of us as hackers are drawn to these types of professions. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's the challenge. It's the thrill. Hey, you know, we didn't have time for this story, which I thought was very important and very good news. New York State Senate overwhelmingly voted to pass electronics right to repair legislation, becoming the first legislative body in the country to do so. It's a major step forward for a movement that has overwhelming public support and has been working towards getting a law done for the last several years. It protects consumers from the monopolistic practices of manufacturers, said Senator Phil Boyle. We all have computers, laptops, and smartphones that we repair once in a while. Many times we have to send them back to the manufacturer for simple repairs that cost a lot more. Now people can repair their own computers, laptops, and smartphones, and farm equipment. Look how that's thrown in there. Their own computers. I'm sorry, every time I say computer, the Alexa app freaks out because that's her name here. Yeah. Every time we people repair their own C-words, laptops, and smartphones, and farm equipment, we don't have to send them back to the manufacturer. So good news, right?
Prepare their own C-words? No, this is very good news. It really, right to repair really is a no-brainer, because it's one of those things where everyone wants to be able to fix the stuff they've got if they can. There is no argument against it except for monopolistic manufacturers and hardware and software people to make sure that they make more money than they're entitled to. It's been fought off by companies with massive amounts of money. It's nice to see that the opposite happened for once.
Now, does anybody know what's missing? I mean, just when you think about it, what is missing from this?
Mm-hmm. What's missing?
I asked a question. All right.
Tell us what's missing. We don't know.
I just think it's really, it's great. It's positive, and I agree with, it's no-brainer, all of that. But why aren't cars included?
Oh.
Now, before you say that's a mechanical thing, didn't we just have a whole bunch of news stories and craziness about chip shortages leaving car manufacturing and all this stuff in disarray and how, you know, everything is dependent on chips, and mm-hmm. and doesn't a chip imply that it is an electronic?
Yeah. No, you raise a good point. I would also say farm equipment, that's a vehicle, but it's not a car.
Well, it's a cutout, a carve out. And mm-hmm. I just think that's very suspicious. But I love that it's happening. I think Canada did something even more or is planning to as well. So this is really spreading, and this is a good thing. We need more of it. And more documentation and less really hostile manufacturing and convoluted designs and just stuff that is unrepairable, or, you know, is a whole assembly, you can't get individual parts, or even, you know, designs for maybe really old stuff, you could release some and help people make replicas properly instead of bad replicas and so forth.
We have a caller on the line, but we haven't given out the phone number yet. It's 802-321-4225. We'll get to that caller in a second. 802-321-HACK. Go ahead, Rob.
I just want to say it's important that they note farm equipment in this, because farm equipment is a major driver of the issue. Farmers, and I'd love to hear from any listeners who work on a farm or have a farm or experience with this directly, because farmers have been put in the position by monopolistic manufacturers where you have to do stupid things like subscribe to your own tractor in order to keep it running year after year. And it's really ridiculous.
Subscribe to your own tractor does sound ridiculous.
It's farm equipment as a service. And it's this model that, we'll control everything and make it, render it unusable unless they pay. And that is predatory.
Exactly. Let's take this call. Good evening. You're on. Go ahead.
Hi. I had two things I wanted to mention.
Okay.
One, you were talking about how wonderful it was that 70% of New Yorkers were vaccinated. But that is not true. 51.0% of New Yorkers are fully vaccinated.
Fully vaccinated, yes. Okay, there's an asterisk next to that. Have gotten a shot. I should have said it that way.
And you should have mentioned that that's only adults. Not, it doesn't include younger people.
Look, I don't know how they get the numbers. All I'm saying is everyone's saying 70%. All I did was repeat 70%. So everyone is outside celebrating, like, I'll be inside looking at the numbers and getting them right. But it's basically a good thing that we're up to. Yeah, it can be higher. It should be higher.
And don't take our advocating or informing as we're throwing caution to the wind or not watching carefully ourselves. It's just a milestone we wanted to make sure people were looking forward to.
And we don't want to encourage other listeners to throw caution to the wind.
But the thing is that they are manipulating the figures, and you accidentally passed along a manipulation.
Well, who's manipulating
the 70%?
Who's manipulating the figures? Who is doing that? Because I'm just hearing it the other way. I'm hearing that that this whole thing is blown out of proportion. You're saying that they're not saying the truth as far as how bad it really is.
70% of adults have had at least one shot,
mm-hmm.
but only 51.1% of the entire population is fully vaccinated.
Okay, so what Joe Biden has asked for the entire country is 70% by July 4th, and that 70%, if I understand correctly, is one shot, not fully vaccinated. Is that correct?
One-shot adults.
So what we are celebrating is the fact that we've reached that particular milestone that Joe Biden would like us to reach by July 4th. And if the rest of the country does the same thing, we'll at least make him happy.
Except that's not going to happen, but anyway.
Not with that attitude, it's not.
Well, New York is ahead of the curve.
Yes, but Vermont is ahead of us. They're 80%. Anyway, did you have something else?
Yes, I did.
What's that?
I wanted to encourage the savvy people mm-hmm. who listen to this overtime to please sign my petition that disabled people need vaccinated AIDS. And I'd like to encourage you, Emmanuel, with your checkmark, to please tweet about it, because I seem to be stalled at 21 people.
Ever since I got that damn check mark on Twitter, everyone's coming to me for favors and obligations and things like
well,
that.
Well, I asked you about this before that even came up,
uh-huh.
you know.
I know. Give out your info. Give out the address so people can sign. And people, please sign.
Okay.
Do you have the info?
I want to give you a piece of good news.
But you have
though.
To give the info out. How do people get to your petition? You got to give the address.
It's change.org/.
Weren't we working on a tiny
URL? Wow.
I'm blanking.
And you wonder why people don't go there.
Mm-hmm. This is the tiny URL part.
Yeah.
Where's the tiny URL? Or whatever. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have to be that.
Disabled need vaccinated AIDS.
That's change.org/ disabled need vaccinated AIDS?
Yes.
And it's spelled AIDES.
Correct.
Perfect.
Okay. I think that's the info. Well, thank you. And we'll spread the word.
I had a piece of good news.
Oh, go ahead. Good news is good.
A couple of pieces of good news on that front. You probably already heard about that hospital that was being sued by 117 people who didn't want to get vaccinated, and the judge ruled in favor of the hospital's sanity, saying
I heard that. If you're in contact with the public,
you need to be vaccinated.
I cannot understand how anybody who works in a hospital would be arguing against getting a vaccine against a pandemic. It doesn't make sense to me. You're in the wrong line of work. You know, and I just thank God there was a judge that saw that. There are too many that don't see that. But this time, yeah, this time the right judge ruled on it.
And the other piece of good news I had is I'm trying to get physical therapy, and I was shocked to find that the person evaluating me had not been vaccinated. And so I wanted to make sure that I made appointments with therapists who had been vaccinated, because you can't keep physical distancing if you're doing physical therapy with a therapist.
Yes.
So they gave me a whole runaround. They're not allowed to do it, but they tell the person, finally, after weeks and weeks of this, a manager said they would instruct the people who make the appointments to only offer me appointments from vaccinated aides. Except they offered me an appointment with someone who'd already told me they weren't vaccinated. But they're going to be getting little stickers to put on their IDs that will say that they're vaccinated if they're vaccinated.
Yeah, I just bought a whole bunch of those stickers.
I just
bought 500 of those stickers on eBay. And basically, whenever I see somebody and I ask, have you been vaccinated? And they say yes, I slap a sticker on them right then on the spot. And you know it's considered a good thing, and that way they don't have the awkwardness of having to prove it anymore, because a sticker can't be faked. You know, that's legit.
Well, these are stickers that are put on their official IDs. So I think there would be a problem if they tried to fake them.
Well, it's not. Yeah, the official ID isn't fake. The sticker, though, it doesn't matter what you put the sticker on. I mean, you could put it on their forehead. It doesn't matter. It's still the same sticker. But, yeah, then, you know.
I take your point.
You might be dealing with a liar, but look, at least you tried. And the thing to remember is you're vaccinated, so that is 90% of it right there. So don't short sell yourself as far as that goes.
I don't want to be victim of a breakout because I can't afford any more medical issues.
Right.
It could kill me.
Absolutely. And I could kill a lot more people than we believe. And I think we've seen that, having hit 600,000 deaths in this country alone in 1 year.
That's a low estimate.
That's a low estimate, exactly. And I don't know if we'll ever find out the real numbers. Anyway, listen, thanks. Thanks for the good news. Best of luck. We'll stay in touch.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Again, phone number, 802-321-4225. Let us know your thoughts and feelings on various things going on or experiences. Rob, yes, go ahead.
I just think the sticker angle is interesting, and I'm thinking I can design a sticker for the non-vaccinated that it's a large sticker, goes completely over the mouth and nose, and I think saves the rest of us a lot of trouble.
You're getting our show banned again just by saying that. You're going to get those people angry. This is medical misinformation. Oh, my goodness. Oh, you have a call? Go ahead. You're on the air. Yes.
Yeah, hi. Are you going to be making an attempt to get Reality Winner to speak at the next Hope Conference?
Well, I can't make that attempt now because she's not allowed to talk to anybody. But as soon as she is allowed to talk to somebody, she certainly would be on my list. We'd have to check if that's what other people want as well. But it sounds like she has a lot to say. I don't know if she wants to say it to us. But right now, I'm just thrilled she's out, one step closer to total freedom. And I hope it's an inspiration to other people to always do what's right.
It really sounds like she worked very, very hard immediately when that became her situation to go through that process and took it on, being released early because of her behavior and so forth. So I'm sure the halfway house is something that will be a necessary part of re-entering society and so forth, but something short.
Well, I'd love to hear her. I'm sure she has a lot of good stories.
Yeah, so, once
I hope you're able to hook up with her when she has the ability to communicate with you guys.
Yeah, well, we have a year, and hopefully sometime this year we can see what's possible.
Yeah, just wanted to point out one other thing. Joe Biden has a vacancy on the FCC, and he still hasn't appointed another member to fill the five-member panel.
Hmm.
So I'd encourage listeners to contact the White House and tell them to, get moving on that.
Yeah.
Because the Republicans are going to try and block any appointments he makes. So while he's got a thin majority, he should go ahead and just appoint somebody.
Who was the vacancy, do you know?
I don't know. I guess, Ajit Pai.
Oh,
he's
gone?
The guy that Trump appointed, he stepped down. And there hasn't been, as I said, Biden hasn't named a replacement, so it's still only four members right now.
Alex, you have something to say?
I thought that the replacement happened yesterday, if I recall correctly. I thought that he was replaced with a woman and that there might have been a vote on this yesterday.
Seems like the kind of thing we could
FTC.
Look up.
I think that was the FTC, not the FCC.
Oh, I'm mistaken.
It's very similar, Alex. Many people would make that mistake.
Yeah, there's so many letters in common there.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm.
true.
There's an FEC, too. Stay away from them.
Right, but yeah, I would encourage people to, like I said, Republicans are going to try and block anything he does, so he really does need to get moving on that.
So we would need somebody in the FCC who values net neutrality, among other things. What other things do we want to see in a candidate? Well, there must be something.
One that is not affiliated with a large corporation, perhaps.
That'd
maybe
nice.
Someone that's worked at a public utility commission or someone that has experience building rural infrastructure or helping people in some way or regulating in some way other smaller sectors of the communications industry.
Alex?
Somebody that wants
sure.
to bridge the digital divide, I think.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Alex.
I hadn't realized it was open to the entire floor, but the we could just generate a giant list of things that we would want from an FCC commissioner. I mean, one of them would be to expand the FCC's role when it comes to privacy enforcement, to go after social media companies that do bad things with our data or share data with bad people and do a lot of things with our data without our consent, to go after more companies when it comes to bad data practices for deceptive trade practices, to actually enforce their consent decrees against platforms like Facebook in a meaningful manner and not just slap them on the wrist with monetary fines that are absorbed within, let's say, a day or a half a day's worth of profits. So, yeah, I mean, we could probably go on and on and
there
on.
There you go. That's what I was looking for.
Yeah, sure. But also, I mean, all of this, really, to bounce off Kyle, is contingent upon Kyle's original request, right? That this person be independent, be able to look at things objectively and not be in the pocket of large corporations, whether it's big tech or anybody else.
All right. Anything else, caller?
No. No, thanks. That was it.
Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Thank you very much. Take care. Again, phone number 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. Someone in the FCC, we could definitely use that. I was not aware there was an opening. But yeah, the caller is right. This is a great opportunity to do something positive. And it won't last for long. It won't last forever anyway.
It really is. And just to go back to Reality Winner for a moment, of course, she is blocked from saying anything. But to people who want to keep up with anything that does develop, I recommend following Reality's lawyer on Twitter. Her name is Alison Grinter, the screen name Alison Grinter. And there is the official statement as they exist now, and I'm sure it'll be updated with developments.
Okay, we have another letter from a listener here, and you could be one of these listeners that writes to us. OTH at 2600.com is our email address, open to all. Dear Off the Hook, first, congrats to Emmanuel for finally unlocking the blue checkmark achievement. I've enjoyed the show during the pandemic and hope you can all be back in the studio soon. I wanted to write in about the whole COVID passport drama. Too many people conflate being anti-passport as being anti-vaccine or being anti-passport as being anti-proof of vaccination. I am pro-vaccine and pro-proof of vaccination, but I am anti any sort of digital passport. There is a common retort about how having to prove your vaccination status is nothing new. Indeed, this has been a requirement for schools and international travel for a long time. But the systems being built today are incomparable to a piece of paper sitting in a file cabinet since 1995 showing I got the MMR vaccine to attend middle school. The primary difference, which seems to be missing in nearly every conversation, is the implementation of such a system and the data that it may generate. Surely people can see how letting a human bouncer visually inspect a CDC card is different than forcing people to install an app on their smartphone and scan it whenever asked. The latter generates a permanent record of your movements, and as adoption increases, would allow governments to query such a system to answer questions like, show me all the people who visited this mosque this week, or give me a list of all the teens who have visited the Planned Parenthood, or this Planned Parenthood office. It's not hard to imagine a future in our data brokered surveillance capitalism economy where businesses sell, trade, and inevitably lose this data. I'm surprised at the lack of nuance around this discussion on the show, especially for a group so creative in the ways in which systems and data can be abused in unintended ways. I was happy to see at least EFF released a cautionary report on this, signed Arthur. And Arthur, you're absolutely right. These are certainly things to be concerned with. And maybe I haven't been looking at it as closely as I should. I'm simply looking at something on my phone that I show to people, and they see it, they look at it, kind of like showing a train ticket to LIRR conductor. I'm not aware of that being on my phone being part of any kind of permanent record keeping, although it certainly could be. It could be misused in that manner. I simply see it as a way that I can easily carry the same information that's on that little piece of paper that I might lose. And it's also just makes me feel good knowing that somehow it's official, you know, that I have the vaccination and it's there. But you're absolutely correct that in this society of ours, where we love to keep track of people and see what they do and where they go, this could be abused quite easily. And either the whole thing is a bad idea, or it needs to be very, very carefully watched and protected. Not really 100% sure which is the best way to go. Right now, getting people vaccinated is the priority as far as I'm concerned. Kyle, did you have something?
Yes, I just wanted to make the distinction between the machine-readable barcode that, like, an app like the Excelsior Pass generates. If you could exfiltrate that from the app, it could be on a laminated card or wherever else you could laser cut it, or, you know, tattoo yourself with it if that makes you feel, I don't know, comfortable or more uncomfortable, depending on what you like. But the point is disconnecting the app. The app itself operating on your phone, if you can't audit that software or have a reasonable control over location and its access to things like location, and that includes from telemetry, just passing by access points, all the different ways you could be located with the sensors, the myriad sensors on a phone, that's distinct from having like a machine-readable copy of something that can verify, that could still place you somewhere, mm-hmm. but it's not going to necessarily track you in the same way. I think there is a distinction there, but this is more levels of it. There is still a point that it certainly organizes all the information of the vaccinated or like these groups of people, and then assessing their behaviors definitely could be facilitated in an app like this.
One thing he said, though, which I don't really agree with, we're not being forced to do this. If we were being forced to do this, I'd have much more of a problem with it. It's a completely voluntary thing. And there are also, what you're talking about, Kyle, with barcodes. How many times do we use barcodes on our smartphones for something else? And that could be tracking us as well by some other entity. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, and there's also the fact that, like, this also is basically on the level with other things that we've been doing. If you've been to bars and nightclubs in the past couple of decades, you very likely, if you got carded at the door by the bouncer, there is a thing where they scan your state ID card, your license, or what have you, to make sure it's genuine and that you're of age. And that's been something that everybody's fine with. There is also the fact that, yes, this is not mandatory. You could carry around your vaccine card as proof. And I'm given to understand, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm given to understand that in all the contexts in New York in which you could be scanning your Excelsior pass to prove your vaccination, you could also just show your actual vaccine card.
Yes, absolutely.
And this is also in the context of like events, concerts, you know, sports events and things like that, where you have a ticket that you bought with your credit card. You know, the information is not anything extraordinary. I don't think that that even would be gathered. But also, like, these venues have also been responsible for personally identifying information as part of their business for decades. And so I don't see how this is much different.
Yeah. And like the machine readable part for a large venue allows a lot of people to move through quickly. It would be much different, though, if that app also was advertising its ability to track your interactions with all 60,000 people in that stadium. But that I don't think is what they're trying to glean from the information. And an example, you had a couple, MTA is another one. They have an app, or the transit in general is moving in this direction. They've started to have it so you can hold your phone to get into the subway system. But it's their system, right? It's not different types of systems like the mosque, as is read in the article, and so forth. So I don't know. There's some disconnecting of it, the fact that it is sort of voluntary, but as it's becoming, as the adoption increases, I guess that's that the ability and the capability, as well as the questions you might want to ask, become myriad. There are so many more questions, I think, as you increase the amount of people using this kinds of stuff. You want to make sure that stuff's handled well. And what if third parties get access to stuff if you're mining it or using it in really exhaustive ways instead of just sort of showing something that's machine readable?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's a voluntary system, but if it ever reached the point where you had to use that as your way of proving you were vaccinated and the card wasn't acceptable, I'd have a real problem with that. Absolutely. But I've never heard that said or even imply that it's going to be that way. It's just something that is easier for some people to handle. People might like to have something electronic. I haven't, of course, other states, other countries might do it completely differently. But what I've seen here, the Excelsior Pass, it doesn't seem to be that. But again, that's no reason not to be cautious. Alex, did you have something?
Yeah. Sure. At a very basic level here, I think, you know, we're dealing with this issue of requiring vaccinations to participate in some activity or another, right? Or even to, in some instances, to go back to the workforce, as a caller earlier had mentioned. But you know, philosophically, I think we have to reconcile something here, or maybe correct a misconception, because we live in a society. We have come out of the state of nature where we can do whatever the hell that we want to do at any time and to any person. And because of the social contract that we have between our government and our fellow citizens, we are a country that is governed by laws. We're a civilization governed by rules and norms and procedures. And when we live under a government has certain rights, and sometimes we have rights, but we have to realize our rights are not absolute. We may have the Bill of Rights, but that does not mean that those rights are absolute. The state has a lot of power when it comes to public health, and our individual rights at some point have to yield to an extent when it comes to the harm of others. We're not giving away the kit and caboodle. This whole slippery slope argument, I think, is a real red herring here, because we're talking about harm, we're talking about other people, we're talking about a duty to our fellow citizens. That is the whole reason we live in a society and don't live out in the jungle. I'm done ranting for now.
Okay, but you realize this is the same society we can't even get people to wear masks, you know, let alone get a vaccine, where people think they're victims because somebody in a Costco asked them to put a mask on their damn face. It's,
no, sure.
Yeah, you can say that our rights are not absolute, but good luck trying to convince people that.
Well, you know, they just need to go back and read some Thomas Hobbes, the Leviathan, some sure we all recall. But speaking of mass, for the last week, I was in Florida, by the way, last week and a half, and that was an experience. Let me tell you, because it's as if the virus never happened in most places down there. I mean, I was over on the West Coast. I won't say exactly where, but everywhere I went, nobody was wearing a mask. It was bizarre.
Inside,
and
too.
And certainly, pardon me?
Inside, too, you mean?
Yes. Oh, inside. That's what I mean. Yeah, I mean, outside, it goes without saying that nobody's wearing a mask in Florida. But inside, where I was on the West Coast, I couldn't believe how few people were wearing a mask. There was an instance where I had to pull off the interstate, grab some coffee at a 7-Eleven, and I went in there, and I was kind of scared because I walked in there. I didn't realize that this was, I don't know, like a major truck stop or something. The place was full of people. I mean, nobody was social distancing. The line was going down one of the aisles. It was really crazy. And when I looked around, nobody was wearing a mask. Nobody. It was scary. I was the odd person out there, and I certainly felt like an outsider. And I felt like people were looking at me differently because I was wearing a mask. And they certainly were. I don't think it was a feeling. It was a reality. And I'm sitting there in a line, and I felt terrible because there was only one other person in the store that probably had to have 50 people in it. It was a small store as well. One other person that was wearing a mask was a kid who was probably 12 or 13 years old. And he went up to the counter, and he was trying to order two slices of pizza. Remember, you get two slices of pizza for $1. That was the sale that they had going on.
That's how they get people to go to Florida.
I guess so. But, I mean, the kid obviously didn't have a lot of money. He's wearing a mask. He's up there. And I'm probably about 25 feet away from him, and I can hear him ordering these two slices of pizza. The guy behind the counter, who was 3 feet away from him, pretended not to hear him. I can't understand you. I don't understand you.
Oh, because you have a mask on.
Until he removed his mask and forced him to say it without the mask on. Then he heard perfectly clear that he wanted two slices of pizza to go.
What an idiot.
That was what I saw. I felt really bad for the kid. I felt really bad for him.
Should have bought his pizza, Alex. You should have paid for his pizza at least.
Well,
could have done that.
I would have. If I was next to him, definitely. Uh-huh. But, it might have incited a riot.
Yeah.
You can't do that.
You know, the only reason these idiots are able to walk around like that pretending there isn't a problem is because a significant portion of people have gotten the vaccine. If it weren't for that, they would all be in the hospital and within a week or two, or so many of them would not survive. It's so ridiculous. And I hope everybody gets through this, but that's not how you get through it. You get through it by the way we've been doing it here, gradually taking steps and being careful, being courteous. I have to say, you know, all my complaining about how people have been misbehaving, I've never seen that myself. Every instance I've had going into a store or a place of business or even on the street, people have been courteous. Nobody has said anything insulting because someone has a mask on or has intimidated anybody. I know that's not the norm everywhere, but I've been lucky, and I think most people are decent. Most people are getting it, and most people care what other people think and care about their safety as well.
Yeah, you really have to look for it. I've found because if you are respectful and considerate of others, they I think are showing that same respect and acknowledging.
Yeah, by that same token, I'm not saying, "Hey, meathead, where's your mask?" I'm not like that.
I
will cross the street.
I think, yeah, you just avoid.
not anymore, but in the past when we had to wear them outside, yeah, I would. And you can laugh at me and say, oh, well, you know, it never did any good outside. Well, you know, whether it did or not, that was the advice at the time, and it wasn't much of a sacrifice. And if it helped in any way, I'm glad to have done it. And if it was not the right thing to do, okay, then we learned that. We learned something.
You might have inhaled less particulates in your lungs.
Yeah, I got some exercise crossing the street all those times. We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime.
Good evening, Off the Hook Overtime.
I can hear the hiss in the long-distance connection. Listen to this. Hear that? Wow.
Well,
it's like the old days. Or maybe you're standing by the ocean.
No, I'm not.
No, you're in Bulgaria. You don't have an ocean, right?
Yes. Well, we have the Black Sea, but it's a bit far off the ocean.
It's very late at night, Bobson, to be at the Black Sea.
No, it's not. It's only 3:34, and that's by summer time, so it's actually 2:30.
So how are things over there?
Well, not getting out much lately, but...
Why is that?
Well, because there's... I try to as much as I can, but it's too many people walking around without masks on, and it makes me... I hear you have been crossing the street when you see such folks, but that's the wrong way to go about it, I think.
Well, staying inside isn't the right way.
The right way to go about it is to get them to cross the street when they see them coming your way.
That's true, but you have to frighten them somehow. I don't know quite how to do
that. Well, if you carry a large enough stick and you wave that, when you wave it at a distance, they figure it out.
I miss him. I really do. How are things vaccine-wise? Is it readily available?
Well, as far as I know, it is, but there were at some different times different shortages here and there. And yeah, there are technologies to certify. Well, people who have been vaccinated get certificated with a QR code on a piece of paper that is linked to a database that a government operated outfit is running to say that, yes, the person who shows you this QR code is vaccinated, according to doctors, so and so. And the thing is, the way it works, at least the national certificate is a piece of paper, and when you show it to someone, there's a URL to the outfit that runs the database that they need to get into their smartphone, which URL then leads them to a web page that takes control of their smartphone's camera, and they point it to the QR code on the piece of paper you're carrying. And then the QR code reader that's being transferred to their camera gives them the result from the database that's, well, whatever the result may be. I've only tried it on mine, so it says so-and-so has been vaccinated and his ID number is so-and-so. If it matches his personal ID, he's vaccinated.
No, but this is only something that that a medical person would use, right? If you buy a sandwich, the person's not going to do that, right?
No. Anyone who gets the piece of paper can put in the URL in their smartphone and point it to the QR code on the piece of paper to get that certified.
Right, on your own piece of paper.
From the certification.
Right, right. But this isn't being used.
No person of any sort.
I'm addressing the listener's concern before. This isn't being used to track your every movement, right?
Well, if someone asks me to show it to him, I have the choice not to.
Exactly.
Another thing, a few weeks later, they came up with a EU-wide version of the certificates, and they have a lot more on their QR code, and I haven't played with that to see what comes out of it, but it may be linked to a Europe-wide database somewhere, but I haven't played with it yet.
Well, that's the important thing, is to play with these things and figure out if there are security issues.
Oh, well. Well, there's a few more things I wanted to mention over the past few weeks. First, I wanted to apologize to you and all of your listeners worldwide for the Eurovision Song Contest thing.
Okay, you know, no, hold on a second. For the first time, I was actually able to watch Eurovision, because I never get to see it. And I thought the Swedish band was really good. They were the heavy rock ones, right?
I wanted to thank Finland for their entry, because they rocked.
Well, no, maybe it was Finland.
I don't remember Sweden.
I think I'm thinking of Finland.
The one you played on the other.
That's okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for mixing the two up. Finland, yes, and of course the winner is Italy. I thought they were great, you know, and rock and roll. It won in the end.
The thing is, Italy gets a free pass on the semifinals. Did you watch the semifinals
no.
or just the finals?
No, just the finals.
There's 2 2-hour semifinals. So yeah, if you're interested, but. Basically, there's 5 countries and the hosting country that get a free pass on the semifinals to the final.
So I love Italy, how everything in Europe has to do with semifinals and quarterfinals and knockout phases. It's so complex. I couldn't figure out the voting
anyhow,
in the end. The voting was so complex.
First 5 large European countries that started the competition in the 1960s. Get a free pass on the semifinals, so no voting is done on their entries.
Huh.
So Germany, Italy, the United Kingdom, France, and Spain, and the host country. Germany, Italy, United Kingdom, France, Spain, and the host country get a pass on the semifinal votes, so they get straight into the final. And the Italian entry that won actually won a very large competition in Italy, which is called the San Remo Festival or what have you.
Uh-huh.
There's an annual competition of Italy that's been going since the 1950s, on which the ESC is based partially, but the winning entry of San Remo winning ESC is a bit, I don't know, I'm not happy that Finland didn't win.
Well, they came out with a great song. And the thing is, yeah. The weirdest part about all this, we keep talking about, we're saying Finland, Italy. We never say the names of the bands. That's what's weird about this whole competition. It's just, it's all countries.
Oh, well. I could look it up if I wanted.
Yeah, you can look it up.
The name of the band.
Right, but it's interesting
and
how
I
it's
have in the
nationalized.
Past few weeks, and I don't remember the name of the band.
Uh-huh, so but you remember the name of the country.
I apologize to the Finland entry.
What was the Bulgarian entry?
Well, it's even less memorable than the theater or however many.
I like the Iceland entry. Did you like that one?
Iceland? Well, yeah, but it's kind of silly.
It was,
and
it was.
It's not the kind of silly that captures my attention for a
They were playing cellos at the beginning or something. It was kind of classical. And
the what?
They were playing, I think, cellos or violins at the beginning, and it just.
And also, it's a family of folks. It's like someone who's singing, and his wife, his sister, their cousin, and something like that.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow.
Interesting.
Well,
bit,
I just thought the entire event was interesting, and it was like it went on without
you
a
may
single.
You may enjoy watching the 2 semifinals.
Yeah. Well, if I know about them, you see, I learned about this the day it was happening.
They're all on YouTube.
That's true. But I learned about it. I learned all the songs in one day. They were all very easy to remember, and there were no commercials throughout the entire thing, which is unheard of in this country.
Well, it's a 4-hour late at night type of thing. So who would be selling bubble gum at that time?
Turn on a TV in the United States at 4 in the morning and you'll see everybody selling everything.
Yeah, I've done that. Didn't enjoy it. Another thing I wanted to mention, I've had an idea because of a phone call you got at overtime a bit more recently than that. One of your listeners was complaining that you don't talk to people on the side that's not very happy about vaccinations and such. And how one thing she mentioned is that very low doses of hydroxychloroquine have been shown by some people to be useful against the pandemic, and that gave me the idea that if we can arrange for a patent on homeopathic hydroxychloroquine, if we set it up so that 85% at least of the proceeds on the patent go to WBAI, that might be of some use.
That's a hack right there. That would definitely be.
I like that.
Yeah, that's the way to think.
Well, I
good thinking.
If you want to do that, I don't mind to.
Might make YouTube mad though. Yeah, we can't. We have to think about that. We have to live in fear. Alex, you have something to say.
YouTube. Oh, we're on YouTube. Okay. Sorry.
Go ahead, Alex.
You do make a great point when it comes to supporting the station. It should be noted that, like any other charitable organization, if you are leaving this earth, you have to bequeath some kind of intellectual property that has a recurring royalty fee to the station. I'm sure we can figure out a way to accept it. And Bobcat's absolutely right. I mean, these things are often
Bobson, done. Not Bobcat. That's a different listener.
Oh, sorry. Okay, Bobson. Sorry.
You just insulted Bobson. Both of them.
Yeah. I got carried away. That's right. And in any event, yeah, it's possible. You could actually do something like that. You can bequeath some IP to the station that can give us some annuity-like income.
But does the station has to monetize it though, right? Or would there be some kind of arrangement? We'll figure out the details.
Why are we talking about this?
We'll figure out the details.
We're not even on the station.
Assuming
right
that
now.
It's already monetized in that sense, right? There's already a system in place. That is
self-perpetuating. Yeah.
Well, I don't plan to patent the homeopathic hydroxychloroquine myself. So
I just want you to keep saying it. I just want to hear you say it because you say it so well.
I've been trying it out. I've been practicing with it, I guess, because I thought you might enjoy the.
I can see Dr. Bobson recommending it to his patients.
I don't have patience.
You have tremendous patience. To yes. talk to us, yeah, absolutely.
Impatience.
Anything else, Bobson? We're going to move on.
Well, there was another thing I wanted to mention. Congratulations on the blue check mark on that database for short messages that you were so happy about, but... I was when you started talking how happy we were about your blue check mark. I remembered another person who had a blue check mark,
mm-hmm.
who was the holder of the highest office in the land over there, the 45th holder who had the blue check mark.
And yeah, we know who that is.
A
yes.
few months later, got banned from their database. So.
Which opened up a blue check. It opened up another blue check. This is, it's not hard to figure out.
They're recyclable.
Yeah, absolutely. Not transferable, though.
Oh, yeah. I understand you are happy, but maybe it's not too much to be happy about anyhow.
You know, I have to take whatever I can get.
It is a little bittersweet.
It is.
We hear you. Yeah, we hear you. Yeah.
All right, Bobson, good to hear from you as always.
Thank you for your time. Have a wonderful evening. Everybody.
All right.
Take care.
Say hi to all the Bulgarians over there and tell them to get a damn vaccine and put their masks on.
Well, most of the people I've talked about it have.
Good.
Call us again.
Yes. All right.
Well, someday.
Thanks for calling
in. I'm not saying next week, but someday.
All right.
You're always welcome.
Bobson from Bulgaria there. Definitely a highlight of our show here. Our phone number still is 802-321-4225, 802-321-HACK. And that's what's going on over there. What else we got? Here's a headline. Ransomware attack hit Teamsters in 2019, but they refused to pay. Is anybody surprised? Is anybody surprised by that? You expect Teamsters to pay ransomware? I could just hear the conversations.
This nerd, I swear. If I find the guy.
I have to get my hands on that guy. Not giving him my half-ass sandwich.
Hey, well, look, that's very heartening because it's good use of union dues, right? I mean, those they don't come cheap. And I think, you know, the union's been protecting their workers and discouraging ransomware being deployed against other unions. So I see this as a great victory for the worker and a massive defeat for the ransomware as a service criminal enterprises.
If you had your records stored on the Teamsters computer system, please send them your information again as they're recompiling it and rebuilding it from scratch. But they're not paying. All right. another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. This is the Gibson from Hackers.Town. We spoke last March at the beginning of the pandemic. And we also
Gibson,
presented the
good
Hook
to hear
last
from you.
Year, so thank you for that opportunity. Hello?
Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry. Okay. I was arguing with our Alexa.
We have a robot here.
Yeah,
a
robot was going nuts.
Sorry. I just wanted to thank you guys for the opportunity to speak at Hope last year. Looking forward to next year. And on the matter of ransomware,
mm-hmm.
My team, I lead a team of threat intelligence professionals that work on this problem day in, day out. One of the things that we have found and that we find is a flaw in all of this is that everybody talks about the ransomware bomb going off at the end of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Usually that's covering tracks on the way out the door for the criminal. The part of this in the modern ransomware delivery method that people don't talk about is the botnet infection that leads to it.
Right, right.
There's anywhere between 11 to 42 days of time that the botnet will be in place before the deliverable is there, giving the attacker plenty of time to really figure out how to evade defenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
and how to infect backups too? How to infect backups that are stored locally?
Right, right. And once, and you know how this works. I mean, once you've got it squared away, they're done, right? I mean, there's no defense, and you're going to be in the position of having to either pay or rebuild, like the Teamsters did. The Teamsters situation is kind of amazing, and I applaud them, frankly, because it takes some testicular fortitude to do what they did.
And I was joking. I was joking about them rebuilding. I don't know how they got out of it, but I don't know if they had to rebuild.
They, according to my sources, they rebuilt from scratch.
Did they? Oh, wow. My joke was right then.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I've read about it. I don't know anybody who was involved in that particular one, so uh-huh. I can't say for sure. But
okay. Well, good for
anyway,
them.
Anyway. Yeah. So, what you know, one of the things that can be done, you know, as we all understand as hackers, going back a bit, you know, data in transit is data that's vulnerable, right? Any place data is exchanged, it's vulnerable. And there are methods in play that you can use to detect those botnet infections from outside of the network. So beyond the walls of the castle, so to speak, you're able to hunt this and then detect and notify whatever team is infected with that, right? Whatever organization's been infected. And you can take away the time that the attacker has, right? This is a thing that isn't in play very much yet and really needs to happen because there's two kill chains to this, and we only talk about one of those two. We need to push back through time to that first kill chain, which is the botnet infection. And when you do that, you give yourself a lot more capability of surviving one of these without incident.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it makes for an entry point in the life cycle of it far earlier, so you're responding to it with a lot more options, I guess, ultimately.
Right. Well, the thing is, it's the thought process around it, right? So if you assume that you're already hit with ransomware somewhere out in the future, and you know this is going to happen, let's just, for the sake of the thought experiment, say that's going to happen. And
okay.
You accept this as an end game, then instead of, you know, playing a game of siege, right, where you're preparing for a siege effectively, you're able to think in a different position and look for those indicators. Most InfoSec teams don't think like this, right? Most of them are focused on endpoint detection and what's going to happen at the last second, and that should be your last circle of defense.
Right.
So, you know, getting in that position where you can assume that you're going to get hit, that puts you in the mindset of being able to look at it differently and say, okay, well, how can I avoid getting hit? What can I do differently?
Well, one thing you might not be able to avoid getting hit, but you can certainly construct something so that you can rebuild quicker. Like have backup tape backup that is off site that you can restore from. Yeah. Yes, it'll be a pain in the ass, but it won't be catastrophic. At least. People make the mistake
right.
of keeping their backups, you know, on the same system. And, of course,
yes,
they get infected as well.
Or network-attached storage or a drive that stays connected or it's in the machine, like a second drive,
yeah.
et cetera, et cetera.
You store it someplace else entirely.
Or, God forbid, a service. that is also compromised, maybe because they're already looking through the kinds of logins and stuff you're doing, etc.
I mean, cloud backups could be a good thing if they don't get compromised in a different way. You know, there's that as an option as well. Alex, did you have something?
Yeah, I want to say I entirely agree with our caller in that the way to get ahead of this is to be more proactive about it, be aggressive, and that, you know, this concept of defense in depth, which is only with respect to the castle that you're protecting, is largely antiquated. You have to be out there. You have to be acquiring good intelligence. But with respect to those botnets, too, and I would like to get his thoughts on this, is that one of the problems is something like fast flux hosting, where the addresses are constantly changing. And we may be able to identify where a good number of these bots are and identify good portions of the network. But again, it's always changing. It's always growing. It's a amorphous sort of animal. And in order to take these things down en masse, take down lots of different hosts that belong to a particular botnet, requires process. You can't just do it. You can't just go to one single service provider and flip a switch. Taking down a botnet requires generally legal process, filing an action, and getting a judicial order to take down a massive network. On the other hand, one alternative here would be then to have some sort of memoranda of understanding in place amongst service providers and perhaps governments that would allow certain types of takedowns to be affected without that type of process. But then when we're giving up that due process, we're giving more power to government. The more power is in their hands, and then that can be abused. So I'd love to get the caller's thoughts on that.
So I can't give away too much of my secret sauce here. What I can say is I am less concerned about shutting down the botnets themselves for what we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish, and more concerned with detecting when they have infiltrated a network that we're protecting. I do very much agree with your take on aggressive blue teams. This is something I talk about regularly, and it's very much what has to happen. The idea of just defending the assets that you support is an ancient way of thought at this point. It started to become that way when we reached into the cloud, and then we decided, okay, well, that's just another part of our castle we have to defend, and that's fine. But with the pandemic and workforces going further afield, suddenly you're in a situation where you have so many attack surfaces that could be anything from a local router at someone's house all the way up to, you know, your cloud environment, your on-premises environment, whatever it is. And as such, the idea, the concept of just defending the edge of your asset, even the concept from 5 years ago of the endpoint becoming the edge of your network, that doesn't work anymore, right? So becoming more intelligence-based and attacking the threats further back the timeline is the way I like to talk about it. I always hate people that use Sun Tzu as an example, but there is something there that applies here. That we get to choose the battleground, right? And if we get to choose the battleground, we should choose the battleground that benefits us, not the aggressor. As such, you know, we think of these battlegrounds as the edge of our network or the edge of our, you know, whatever our assets are. The truth of the matter is that battleground is time. It's not the edge of the network. It's the time you have to respond to an infection or an attack. And in order to be able to do this, we have to get better at the intelligence we gather to warn us that this is coming. So we, on my team, and like I said, I can't get into too much detail, but we do the same thing that governments do, frankly, to spy on their own citizens. Yeah, I said that. But we're using it not to violate the privacy of individuals. We're collecting metadata. Right, we've got listening arrays we're collecting metadata with, and it allows us to pinpoint where these infections are at and when they're inside of an organization, and then we can reach out to that organization and work to remediate before they get hit. And that's kind of the model we work with. So, you know, my focus is a little less about that. Although I do agree with you that we have a situation here where governments themselves are slow to respond to this sort of thing. Even at their quickest, I mean, it's bureaucracy. It's going to slow things down. I don't believe that's a negative necessarily. So, you know, what can be done there are effectively the same as a non-governmental organization to provide defenses against these sorts of botnets and networks, these threat actors. And that could be organized through, first of all, let me say, I am not a free market capitalist kind of person, but what I am saying is that we could put together our own organizations effectively that offer these defenses to an area. If you look at Australia, for example, last week, their intelligence agency started warning Australian organizations of these botnet infections. It's kind of the same as what I'm describing, right? We've been working on the same concept in two different places, it turns out. So them providing that sort of intel ahead of time to warn those that are about to be impacted is exactly what I'm talking about. The idea of a regional defense shield, for lack of a way to put it, for this might be very plausible. And it might give us the ability to respond to these things in a timely manner instead of waiting for a federal or even state government to move.
You need to write an article for 2600. You know that, right?
Yeah, I can do that. That's not a problem.
Uh-huh.
This is the stuff that we do all day long. And like I said before, you know, you guys are legends. So, I mean, I know who you are. And I respect that. So thank you for that. I'll take it as a compliment. And if you want me to write something, I'll put pen to paper.
Absolutely. Definitely. Definitely. And keep doing what you're doing and spreading the information.
Yeah, that's why everybody's having more intelligent conversations about it. And we love hearing an in-depth kind of take. And it's valuable. So please, if you're at all interested, we'd love to share what you know and help other people get educated.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Alex, I know you do a lot of threat intel yourself with some of your tools that you've developed. If you want to hear more about what we're trying to do here, I'm happy to have that discussion in private sometime, even over email. But I don't want to, like I said, I don't want to broadcast exactly what we're doing because I could offer comfort, so to speak. So we don't want to go there.
Okay. Well, you can connect to us, oth@2600.com, and we can get back to you individually or however you want. And
understood.
Sounds good. Well,
and to say to the caller,
yes.
you were reading my mind entirely. You know, it sounds like a lot of the work that you do, we do some sort of analog of in the DNS, and maybe there's an opportunity to collaborate there. That started on Off the Hook Overtime.
Oh boy.
On 16th of June.
I'd wear it like a badge, Alex. So yeah, we can.
As would I.
We can
talk
about.
Let's carry that conversation offline for sure. And thank you so much for the call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, take care.
Good night.
Wow, interesting calls tonight. Absolutely.
What a great call.
Yeah,
When the calls come in, you know, rolling like that, one after the other, it
yes.
really adds momentum.
But
the,
please stop, because we're tired and we want to go. And
we've
been doing this for a while.
Hour,
now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we sure did. And,
2 minutes
and,
after nine. Huh?
And some of us haven't eaten all day. And all sorts of other challenges.
Well, we don't want to wear out the internet either.
No, exactly. And on that subject, by the way, I don't know if anybody else has noticed this. I'm looking at our broadcast thing. It says excellent connection right now. But a few minutes ago, during that call, it said no data. And in fact, there's a little spinning wheel at one point. So if anyone out there is listening to this and there's a cutoff in the YouTube program, if the audio cuts off, let us know. Email us, oth@2600.com. Because we have a local copy we can replace that does not have that happen. Someone's not listening. No more calls. No more calls. Please. We're done. But yeah, if we're not posting entire copies here, we need to know about that. And that's something I just noticed right now.
Yeah. I was updating some things, so maybe...
Did you take the internet?
Maybe I broke it. I don't think it's affected, though. I think that has been an issue, but I'll work on that.
It just said no data, and there was a spinning wheel, so I just was concerned.
The machine you're using for that could use some better connectivity,
oh,
I think.
I'll criticize my machine now.
No, it's not the machine. It's the connectivity.
If that entire call is intact, then we're fine. But if it got cut off in that call. Anyway, enough housekeeping. Good to be back. We'll see everybody next week for both Off the Hook and Off the Hook Overtime. Again, write to us, oth@2600.com. We'll see if somebody tries to take the show off YouTube again. And see, it's doing it again. It's spinning. It's spinning. Oh, I don't know what it means. It's YouTube. We'll be back next week. Good night, everybody.